This is Larry Jones. You are listening to the Grace and Glory Hour of the Dyer Baptist Church with our co-pastors, David M. Atkinson and Dr. Lee Atkinson. We are coming to you from Dyer, Indiana. Our prayer is that you will be strengthened by the word today. Now, here is our pastor.
Let's take our Bibles, please, and turn to 1 Samuel 18, the 18th chapter of 1 Samuel, verse number 5. We continue our Lord's Day evening series on the life of David. And David went out whithersoever Saul sent him, and behaved himself wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. And it came to pass as they came, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, that the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul. That was and still is the custom of the Israelis, to sing and dance in demonstrations of joy at weddings and times of great victory. The women came out to meet King Saul with tabrets, with joy, and with instruments of music. And the women answered one another as they played. Now this was probably responsive, interactive singing, responsive joy, with one group of women taking one line and the other group of women answering back, calling, answering back. This is what they were saying to each other. Saul hath slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And Saul was very wroth, and the saying displeased him, and he said, they have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more but the kingdom? What can he have more but the kingdom? Our theme for this series is David, a heart after God. Having looked many, many weeks ago at the backdrop of the life of King Saul, the tragic life of King Saul, and having seen in King Saul an example of the heart God must reject, we have moved on to investigate a more positive subject, the heart God can accept. David generally, not always, but generally, had the kind of heart that God can accept. Recently, we observed that God accepts the humble 5-stone heart. The heart that doesn't presume it can kill its giant with the first stone, but the heart that is so humble it takes additional stones. A heart that is not proud in itself, it trusts God, but it's not cocky and overconfident in itself. It's a 5-stone heart. We've also seen that God accepts the heart that does not lose its head to success. And we've seen that God accepts the heart that is not afraid to receive and return love. And we saw that kind of a heart in the reciprocal covenant relationship between David and Jonathan. David, first of all, receives the unilaterally offered covenant love of Jonathan. He receives that love, though he has nothing really to offer in return. He receives that love, and then he returns it. God accepts the heart that is not afraid to receive and give love. Now let's next observe a point of irony, out of which we will glean additional insight into the amazing heart of David. Look at verse 8, the end of the verse. They've ascribed to David 10,000s. And to me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more but the kingdom? Now let's compare Saul's bitter statement with what we read back in 1 Samuel 16. With these words, what more can he have but the kingdom? With those words ringing in our ears, let's go back to 16, verse 11. We start in the middle of verse 11. And Samuel said to Jesse, send and fetch him, that is, send and fetch David, for we will not sit down till he come hither. And he sent and brought him in. Now David was ruddy, and withal of a beautiful countenance, and goodly to look to. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. Then Samuel took the horn of oil, and anointed David in the midst of his brethren. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. Now there's the irony. Saul, as he hears the joyous chants of these women with their antiphonal singing, as he hears the women, he's filled with jealousy and rage and anger, and he says, what more can he have but the kingdom? What's the irony? You tell me, what's the irony? What more can he have but the kingdom? Why is that ironic? He already had the kingdom. When these women unwisely, and I say very unwisely, these women were part of the problem. They spoke ill-advisedly. They should not have been speaking and singing this way. They played right into the jealous paranoia of King Saul. But when these women unwisely praised David more than Saul, and Saul snarled, what more can he have but the kingdom? It's ironic because as far as God was concerned, David already had the kingdom. As far as God was concerned, it was as good as done. God does not live in time. There's no time with God. God sees the end from the beginning, and as far as God was concerned, David's being king was as good as already done. And let me add that that shows how weak and puny and flimsy our flesh and our humanistic manipulation is. God's in control. God's in charge. And if God wants you to have a kingdom, He'll get you a kingdom. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to plot and plan. If a kingdom is in God's plan for you, He'll get you the kingdom. And if it's in His plan for you to lose your kingdom, you lose it. Flesh effort, manipulation, or no manipulation. You lose your kingdom if it's God's time for you to lose your kingdom. But we get all involved in all of these energies and machinations of the flesh, thinking that we're going to change things. What a pathos-filled moment. What more can he have but the kingdom? But there's something else. It wasn't just God who knew that David already had the kingdom. David knew that David already had the kingdom. When God decrees something, it's as good as done. And that brings us to the 16th kind of heart God can accept. To me, it's one of the most important. God accepts the heart that has the kingdom, but does not have to act like it. God accepts the heart that has the kingdom, but does not have to act like it. He who really has the kingdom does not have to say he has the kingdom. When you see a man or woman who's constantly reminding everybody, now I've got the kingdom is mine, make a little note in the margin of your diary. He who really has the kingdom doesn't have to go around constantly reminding people that he has the kingdom. It is obvious when the secure leader has his kingdom, and it's obvious when the insecure leader does not have his kingdom. A kingdom of any duration, this is so important, listen carefully. A kingdom of any duration is had and maintained by way of the voluntary surrender of the hearts of the people to the king. That's the only way anyone holds a kingdom for any length of time. By way of the voluntary surrender of the hearts of the people to the king or the leader. That's the only way you have and keep the kingdom. If the king, if the leader does not really have the hearts of the people, he does not really have the kingdom. If you have the hearts of the people, you've got the kingdom. That's all you need, but it's what you need. To have the kingdom, you must have the hearts of the people, the followers. There is no power or political tactic on earth that can force people to give their hearts to a king they don't love and respect. It's the king's to win or lose. It's the leader's to win or lose. God accepts the heart that wins the hearts of others because of the quality and character of itself. I repeat, God accepts the heart that wins the hearts of others because of the quality and character of itself. Look at chapter 18, verse 16. I like this verse so much. All this is great. And this is a key to the difference between the leadership of David and the defaulting, rotting dictatorship of King Saul. Look at chapter 18, verse 16. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he went out and came in before them. They're beginning to react against Saul. They're beginning to turn against King Saul. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he went out and came in before them. The kingdom was Saul's to lose, and lose it he did. Saul lost the leadership of his kingdom by tactics such as are described elsewhere in 1 Samuel. We're going to spend a few moments tonight looking at some of the tactics of Saul, some of the very actions that turned his people against him. And as we look at some of the methods or tactics of King Saul's leadership, all the while keep in mind that God accepts the heart that has the kingdom but doesn't have to act like it. Turn first to 1 Samuel 14 to look at the first method or the first tactic that exemplifies the style of leadership that Saul was using. Chapter 14, verse 24. I'm going to read a long passage. Bear with me and catch something of the atmosphere of Saul's leadership style. Chapter 14, verse 24. Then the men of Israel were distressed that day, for Saul had adjured the people, saying, "Cursed be the man that eateth any food until evening, that I may be avenged on mine enemies." So none of the people tasted any food. And all they of the land came to a wood, and there was honey upon the ground. And when the people were come into the wood, behold, the honey dropped. But no man put his hand to his mouth, for the people feared the oath. But Jonathan heard. Jonathan heard not when his father charged the people with the oath. Wherefore he put forth the end of the rod that was in his hand, and dipped it in an honeycomb, and put his hand to his mouth, and his eyes were enlightened. Honey is one of the purest energy foods there is. And the honey brought great enlightenment to the eye, the sparkle to the eye, which speaks of physical energy, to Jonathan. Verse 28, then answered one of the people and said, "Thy father straitly charged the people with an oath, saying, Cursed be the man that eateth any food this day." And the people were faint. Then said Jonathan, my father hath troubled the land. See, I pray you how mine eyes have been enlightened because I tasted a little of this honey. How much more if haply the people had eaten freely today of the spoil of their enemies which they found? For had there not been now a much greater slaughter among the Philistines? And they smote the Philistines that day from Michmash to Aijalon, and the people were very faint. And the people flew upon the spoil and took sheep and oxen and calves and slew them on the ground. And the people did eat the meat of these animals. The people did eat them with the blood. That was against Jewish law. I won't get into how rare you should have your steak. That's your business. And don't you tell me how I should have mine done either. But that's the issue. This was the Jewish law of being kosher. They were not supposed to eat meat with the blood. But because of the stupidity of Saul's style of leadership, which style of leadership was created by his own fearful, insecure heart, because of that stupidity, they ate the meat with the blood and broke one of the well-known Jewish laws. Verse 33. Then they told Saul, saying, "Behold, the people sin against the Lord, in that they eat with the blood." And Saul said, "Ye have transgressed. Roll a great stone unto me this day." Now, who caused the people to sin? Who? Give me his name. Saul caused the people to sin. Another question. Is this the kind of leadership that wins the hearts of followers? It most certainly is not. Let's go also to chapter 22 and see another example of the decadent, selfish style of Saul's leadership. Chapter 22, verse number 7. This is another situation, but an example of his ongoing style of leadership and a reflection of his heart. Then Saul said unto his servants that stood about him, "Hear now, ye Benjamites. Will the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards and make you all captains of thousands and captains of hundreds? What's David going to do for you? Listen to me. What's he going to do for you?" Verse 8. "But all of you have conspired against me, and there is none that showeth me that my son hath made a league with the son of Jesse. And there's none of you that is sorry for me." Oh, get out your handkerchief. Get your handkerchief out. My daddy used to say, "Son, you'll make your own bed and you're going to have to lie in it. Get your hanky out." He wants us to cry with him. My own son is in league with David, son of Jesse, against me, and none of you feel sorry for me. None of you even want to tell me. "There's none of you that showeth unto me that my son hath stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as it is this day." He was angry about the fact that the Benjamites wouldn't take his part. They wouldn't come over on his side. And he said that the Benjamites didn't serve him well. Verse 17. He puts his anger and his jealousy and his insecurity into action. A policy of action. "And the king said unto the footmen that stood about him, Turn and slay the priests of the Lord, because their hand also is with David, and because they knew when he fled and did not show it to me. But the servants of the king would not put forth their hand to fall upon the priests of the Lord. And the king said to Doeg, Turn thou and fall upon the priests. And Doeg the Edomite turned, and he fell upon the priests, and slew on that day 85 persons that did wear a linen ephod." He was upset because the Benjamites wouldn't spy. He was upset because the priests wouldn't spy and take his part against his son Jonathan, who had the alliance with David. And so he has dozens and dozens of priests, the servants of the Lord, slain. Question: is this the kind of leadership that endears followers? No, it's not. Saul was the kind of unwise father who provoked his own child to wrath and then blamed the child. And ye fathers, said Paul to the Ephesian believers, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. Saul's heart was so cold and so hard and so self-centered that he did not understand that principle. Saul provoked his own son, Jonathan, to wrath and then blamed the boy. Saul provoked the people through hunger to unrest and bitterness and then blamed the people. Why don't you spy for me? Why don't you tell me what's going on? You don't love me anymore. Saul is the one who caused it. Saul is a picture of selfish, insecure, authoritarian dictatorship. Saul is a picture of leadership that resorts to force because it cannot lead by influence. I'm going to say that again, and I want you to say it with me. Saul is a picture of leadership that resorts to force because it cannot lead by influence. Say it with me. Saul is a picture of leadership that resorts to force because it cannot lead by influence. Say it again. Saul is a picture of leadership that resorts to force because it cannot lead by influence. David, by and large, led by influence. And that's biblical leadership, to lead by what you are under God and by God's grace. That's leadership. Godly influence. Leadership is not to be equated with force. And how many Baptist churches in this land have been torn to smithereens because preachers assumed that leadership was force and didn't realize that leadership is influence? If leadership is force, what happens when the stimulus is withdrawn? If leadership is force, what happens when the pressure point is withdrawn? Talk to me. What happens? Everything goes into disarray. Everything falls to pieces. If leadership is nothing more than pressure point power or force. But if leadership is influence, you can put the leader in the grave. And his leadership will still set up a torch for followers to follow if leadership is influence. We've got too many that are seeking leadership as a thing of power or force, and not enough who are wise enough to realize that real leadership, leadership that counts, is influence, period. The secure leader is content to lead by influence. Saul knew that he no longer had the hearts of his followers, so he had to constantly resort to decrees and vows, ultimatums, new rules. I'll tell you what, this situation demands a new rule. Nobody eats till I win my war. All the signs of an insecure man. Leadership that has a bad heart and a heart that has to let everybody know that it has the kingdom. That kind of leadership resorts to threats and ultimatums to try to hold under control. I've got news for you, young person, tonight. Control isn't worth having. Control isn't worth beans. Control is not what you may think it is as a young person. All control will do is give you headaches. There's a leader. All control will do is just set you up for more insecurity. But influence changes lives. God accepts the dispensable. Don't have to have it. Secure heart that has the kingdom but doesn't have to act like it. That's the kind of heart God accepts. Let's take just a few moments, and this is going to be longer tonight, but I know you'll bear with me because I spent time working on it. Take just a few moments and hear what others have said regarding the kind of heart that can be used by God in leading nations, kingdoms, empires, businesses, mission boards, churches, and homes. What kind of heart can God use in leadership? What have people said over the centuries? Pittacus said, "The measure of a man is what he does with power." David understood that. And David tests out very well on what he does with power. Lao Tzu, in about 600 B.C., said that the good leader's heart is like water in some respects. Lao Tzu said, "Water is fluid, soft, and yielding." That's the opposite of what King Saul's heart was like. Water is fluid, soft, and yielding. But water will wear away rock, which is rigid and will not yield. As a rule, whatever is fluid, soft, and yielding will overcome whatever is rigid and hard. This is another paradox, said Lao Tzu. What is soft is strong. Now, is there support for Lao Tzu's philosophy of leadership in the inspired scriptures? Most certainly there is. Proverbs 25:15 says, "By long forbearing is a prince persuaded, and a soft tongue breaketh the bone." A soft tongue, the soft instrument, breaketh the hard bone. Proverbs 15:1 declares, "A soft answer turneth away wrath." King Saul had long gotten the place. He didn't know how to give anybody a soft answer. "Here's my new law. No eating till I win my battle." "For the soft tongue breaketh the bone." Near the end of his life, I like this part. Near the end of his life, in one of his last songs, David himself corroborates this secret of his great leadership and how he attracted and held the hearts of the people of his vast kingdom. Turn to 2 Samuel 22. 2 Samuel 22. This is one of David's last songs. And he pulls back the curtains on his own life and his own heart, and he shows us in verse 36. Verse 36, in this almost last or last song, he shows us the key as to why his heart drew people while Saul's heart repelled people. The 36th verse of that chapter reads this way, "And thy gentleness hath made me great." I've met some fundamentalists who don't know that. That it's God's gentleness that makes a man or woman great. Now, the word translated gentleness in the English is the Hebrew word anava. Anava, which means condescension, modesty, clemency. Clemency. "Thy clemency hath made me great. Thy condescension hath made me great. Thy humility hath made me great. Thy meekness," or as it is in the Authorized Version, "thy gentleness hath made me great." That's a picture of the heart of David. James Hudson Taylor, the founder of the China Inland Mission, who probably knew more about early missionary strategy than many others, did not leave us a manual on how to do missions. He left us a brief commentary on the Song of Solomon. It's a very sweet, gentle, loving book. Song of Solomon is a book that deals with the issues of the heart. But not only that, James Hudson Taylor said this, "Hard missionaries are of no use." Let's put that in the curriculum of some of our fundamentalist colleges. Hired missionaries are of no use. They are not like the Master. He is never hard with common or sincere people. Now, Jesus could be hard on phonies and hypocrites and Pharisees. He could be hard, but Jesus was never hard with common, sincere people. David was generally gentle and tender, and David's tender gentleness drew the people to rally around him and support him for love's sake. Love will do what law can never do. David was usually an authoritative leader. He believed in the truth of God, but he stood upon God's truth, not upon the authority of his own person. That was the difference between the authoritative leadership of David and the authoritarian leadership of King Saul. David attracted followers. Saul repelled them. Authoritative leaders who say, "Thus saith the Lord, and we should do this for God's sake," and don't just fall back on their office or their position. Authoritative leaders, leaders of the gentle, tender heart, leaders who have the kingdom but don't have to act like it, draw people. The beloved and effective commander and later president, Dwight Eisenhower, said, "You do not lead by hitting people over the head. That's assault, not leadership." General Patton, oh yes, the screen glorified Patton with his filthy, cussing tongue. Patton, who destroyed himself. General Patton tended to be like King Saul. Patton was successful for a time, and this heavy stuff, this hard stuff, usually seems to work for a while. But the chickens come home to roost, and people just get plain weary of someone beating them over the head all the time. And Patton seemed to be successful for a while, but his own harsh, bitter spirit became Patton's downfall. Patton went to a tent hospital and saw an American soldier sitting on the cot, and the American soldier was shaking and quivering. He had been out in the battlefield where a bomb exploded. And Patton came up with his leather gloves off, and he said, "What in the world is wrong with you?" And the American soldier said, "Sir, I don't know. I'm sorry, I don't know. I just can't stop shaking." And Patton took that leather glove, and smashed the American soldier across the face, and that was the beginning of the end of promotions for Patton. Eisenhower said, "That's as far as Patton goes, because he can't handle power." And generally speaking, King Saul was like General Patton. Generally speaking, King David, General Eisenhower, was similar to King David. You don't lead people by hitting them over the head. That's assault, not leadership. In a recent newspaper, I'm almost through. In a recent newspaper, this broke my heart. There was a full-color picture of a weeping, moaning female African-American. Get the picture now. She's weeping and she's moaning. She was bent over the body of a motorcycle gang type white American who was sprawled flat on the sidewalk. By the way, this is less than a month old. So here she is, this African American, sprawled over the body of a Caucasian American who's dressed like a motorcycle gang member, and he's down on the sidewalk. The copy under the picture read, "Keshia Thomas, the young black woman, 18, shields a man being beaten with sticks by a crowd of anti-Ku Klux Klan demonstrators in Ann Arbor, Michigan on Saturday. The man was attacked by the anti-Klan people after he was seen with a Confederate flag on his jacket during a pro-Klan rally. So you got the picture. A pro-Klan rally is taking place. This motorcycle gang type Caucasian American is there with a Confederate flag on his jacket, and the anti-Klan people start to beat him and pummel him to the sidewalk in Ann Arbor, Michigan with sticks. And this is what 18-year-old black Keisha Thomas said. Just because you beat somebody doesn't mean you're going to change his mind. Here she is, black. He looks like he's sympathetic to the Klan, which is traditionally considered to be the enemy of the blacks, and she's protecting him and saying to the other anti-Klan people, just because you beat somebody doesn't mean you're going to change their mind. She's well on her way to being a leader, whether she knows it or not. Are you trying to be the kind of leader that Saul was? Just letting everybody know that you have the kingdom? Or are you so much knit to biblical truth that you don't have to let your followers know that you have the kingdom? David had a heart that understood the principle that Sheila Murray Bethel gives to business leaders all across America. Sheila Murray Bethel, who lectures to business leaders, says this, that the principle for leaders is this: the higher up the ladder of leadership you go, the more gently you reach down. I wish there were some fundamentalist colleges that would put that in the curriculum. The higher up the ladder of leadership you go, the more gently you reach down. Henry Ward Beecher said, greatness lies not in being strong, but in the right use of strength. Margaret Thatcher, former Prime Minister of Britain, and boy, would the Brits like Maggie back now. That pink milk toast they have over there now for a conservative doesn't deserve to be called a conservative. The conservative Brits want Maggie back, the Iron Lady. But even the Iron Lady said, being powerful is like being a lady. If you have to tell people that you are, you aren't. I tell you what, warriors, you're not going to eat till I win my battle. That's King Saul's heart. Abraham Lincoln said, nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him power. In his book, Spiritual Leadership, J. Oswald Saunders writes, in training men for leadership, the Apostle Paul, like his master, did not try to exert occultic control over the minds of men. Both Jesus and Paul were satisfied to get what influence would bring. Both Jesus and Paul, continues Oswald Saunders, ultimately relied on the promised cooperation of the Holy Spirit's power. Isn't that something? You get Baptists who say they're indwelt by the Holy Spirit and don't even trust the Holy Spirit to bring things to pass. Paul and Jesus relied on the power of God the Father to get done what needed to be done. I'm almost through. Did I say that a few moments ago? Or was that an hour ago? You don't have to stay here and listen. You can go home if you want to. I hope that the influence of what I'm saying will keep you in your seats for a couple more minutes. If it doesn't, then that gives a good commentary on my lack of leadership. Thomas Connolly said this about Robert E. Lee. Thomas Connolly said, Robert E. Lee's courtesy to junior officers and private soldiers reflected his great human spirit. Robert E. Lee was a gentleman, and he saw no need to prove it. Lee himself said, forbearing the use of power is not only a touchstone, but the manner in which an individual enjoys certain advantages over others is the test of a true gentleman. I repeat, the manner in which an individual enjoys certain advantages over others is the test of a true gentleman. The power which the strong have over the weak should not show needlessly. That's the difference between King Saul and the heart of David. Robert E. Lee's credo was this: a gentleman possesses authority, knows it, but applies it judiciously. A gentleman does not needlessly and unnecessarily remind an offender of a wrong. A gentleman does not needlessly and unnecessarily remind an offender of a wrong. He not only forgives, but can forget. A gentleman does not make a practice of publicly humiliating his subordinates. I'm closing with this. One of the strongest rebukes that Robert E. Lee ever gave was to General Jeb Stuart, right at the beginning of the Battle of Gettysburg. Jeb Stuart didn't show up for a day and a half. And Lee relied on Jeb Stuart to be his eyes. Stuart was a great scout. And Lee was lost without his other pair of eyes, Jeb Stuart. Finally, after a day and a half, and by the way, that's what lost the Battle of Gettysburg. The failure of Jeb Stuart to show up when he should have, he was always early, except at Gettysburg. And one of the strongest rebukes Robert E. Lee ever gave to any subordinate was when Jeb Stuart rode up, General Lee just turned and looked at him and said, "Where have you been?" McClellan said, "The real leader manages from influence as though he had no authority. He leads on the basis of the quality of his heart, his mind, his ideas, and his vision. And people want to follow. God accepts the heart that has the kingdom, but doesn't have to act like it."
Isn't that just like the Lord? So very much like Jesus.
Thank you for joining us today. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is graceglory7@juno.com. graceglory7@juno.com. Pastor David M. Atkinson also has a ministry on Facebook and invites you to connect with him there. Now, until the next time, remember to walk softly with the Lord.